You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice.
Welcome to the One Mic, One Voice show, Building the Collective Conscience, a show that is created to give space where your voice, ideas, and informed opinions can be heard, appreciated, and debated. I am Michael Eric Owen.
And I'm DT alongside my good friend, Michael Eric Owens. Man, how you feeling today? You're looking, man, you're looking strong, man. Man, this cat got on a sweater. And I mean, the shoulders are bulging out, protruding out of the sweat top.
You know, I'm trying to take care of myself a little bit, man. I look at you and Richard, man. Y'all like, the epitome of, six, eight, 12 pack and everything. You know, all I'm trying to do is get my little four pack together.
But you like Coors Light, Bud Light? What are you talking about?
But folks, we got an exciting show here today. Is empathy overrated? Is empathy overrated?
I don't believe so.
We will find out today whether or not empathy is overrated.
You know, Mike, empathy is a tool for building people into groups, for allowing us to function as more than self-obsessed individuals. And that's a quote by Neil Gaiman. And I kind of echo that, man. I think empathy is something that is used to build trust amongst people, something that we use as an opportunity to grow with other folks. Like you said, bring folks together, bring groups together. Empathy is vital to our existence as human beings.
But before we get into that, folks, what we want to do, we're going to do this session called Trumping Down the Road. Huh. Trump has had a very interesting.
Is the road made of
week.
Gold?
Well, if he had his way, it probably would be, and American people would pay for it. But the reality is, he's had a very interesting week, and he's signed more executive orders than any other president within the first week of being in office. And you know what's so, I think, what's so troubling about all of this is that he was so critical, along with Mitch McConnell, along with Paul Ryan. I mean, they called President Obama a dictator, that he thought he was a king because he was signing executive orders. He didn't have the authority to do that. But where's that? I guess it's okay now because it's their party that's signing all these executive orders. And some of these executive orders, they're rubbing people the wrong way.
People are getting what they asked for, though, right?
Well,
thing is, to me, is it's like, one, for no time in my lifetime do I remember there this much attention being put on one presidency besides Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. But in saying that, you know, the executive order thing to me and the differences between Obama and what I've seen with Trump so far is – Even when Obama was there signing the executive orders, there was a reason. Mm-hmm. He could explain some of it to you. You know, as you know, people were sitting there observing, taking pictures, or doing whatever. To me, Trump is like when you get credit for writing your name on a paper in class. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like if you can spell your name, you can get this level of grade, you know, but if you ask me to explain it, my grade go down because I don't know what the hell all of this is about, you know? Yeah. And so Trump is like signing his name to all of these things, but with very little knowledge about what
the impact
mm-hmm. or the details of these things entail. You know, this is a great thing for jobs. Everybody, he's waving it around.
Everybody's going to love it.
Yeah, everybody's going to love it. But, you know, there's no real depth of knowledge into what it is about for him or for the people that are happy about him signing it.
I mean, the outrage has got to be killing him because he is a narcissist. And so I think, and they say this guy just consumes television, man, like nobody else. and his ego, I mean, he can't take any type of criticism when it comes to his ego. And so I think it's got to be killing him to see. I mean, he made a statement that, you know, the airports, everything's working out fine. And I'm like, dude, people are like protesting at the airport. I'm like,
there is absolutely zero problems. Exactly. We're taking care of it.
I'm just thinking,
like, you're not there, dude. Yeah.
It's so funny to me that and again, I don't believe he can be that oblivious to what's going on in our country today. But oh man, it's hot, man. From the Dakota Pipeline, the Keystone Pipeline, and to this new American pipeline idea that he's trying to, man, he, you know, no care for the environment whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But DT, you said something that was true. He ran on these things. He mm-hmm. said he was going to do these things, but he put it this hiring freeze, right? But he's going to hire so many more border patrols. So I don't know how you have a hiring freeze in the government and then you start hiring people. So a selective, I guess, hiring freeze, pulling out of NAFTA, ending TPP. The Mexican president, you know, they went back and forth. Man, when do you have two world leaders go back and forth on Twitter?
That's the new age, hey. Twitter beefs, baby.
Arguing
you want these
Twitter.
Problems? Holler at me on social media.
You know, I mean, it used to be where a president would go and talk with their advisors and you know, really kind of gauge their ideas and a strategy for dialogue with a world leader. Understanding the implications, the long range implications, the short term implications. It's just my phone, you know, the hell with you. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're not going to pay for the wall, we don't even need to meet.
Man, yeah, that like takes away the personal experience of it all, right?
And
it's like you're talking to a kid, you know, like when you talk to kids, you have to, you know, communicate with them in a certain way that they can understand. They can't handle, you know, maybe a face to face conversation, but.
I mean, it's just so sad to me that we see these important issues of our day being played out between two leaders on Twitter. The president of Mexico
breaking up the text message.
He Mexico is our third largest trading partner. I mean, there are problems with pissing off mm-hmm. another leader, man. I mean, nobody's afraid of Donald Trump. He seems to think that bullying this his ability to push people around and intimidate people somehow scares individuals. I mean, these are people that have risen through the ranks. Many of them are qualified much more than he is when it comes to government, when it comes to foreign affairs, and when it comes to international relations. And this guy seems to think that, you know, we're on the playground and I'm just going to threaten you and you're going to give me your lunch money. It don't work like that, man. I mean, this is the real world.
The element that is missing also is that, you know, some of these people are ready to die, you know, behind their ideals and behind the things that they really feel are important to them. And like you said, it's like the intimidation factor only worked to a certain degree when you're dealing with people who are really and willing to risk their lives for what they really believe.
No matter. Trump ain't ready to die. I can tell you that right now. He'd be the
and
first one running.
That's why it's more feasible to get your message across on Twitter than it is to show up to a conference where you have to be in conflict with people face to face.
He'd be the first one running begging for his life. I mean, this thing about this ban here, okay, this is the one that I think is most, well, the other ones are egregious too, but this one is at the top of the list. I mean, you know, again, man, I don't understand how people get their information, how people interpret that information, and then disseminate that information. Because I'm like reading the same thing you're reading. Hmm. But when you internalize it and disseminate it, dude, it's all jacked up. I mean, I don't even understand how you did you read the same? And you know these people on social media that refuse to read articles. I mean, you're making an argument with me, and I just say, okay, just read that. Just read it. Just read it. Oh, they refuse to read it. It's like, and I told this one person, I said, you know, you're guilty of intellectual laziness mm-hmm. because you can't spend 5 minutes reading an article that will clearly tell you.
They'll debate you for 5 minutes.
That you're wrong. Oh, yeah, they'll debate you for 5 minutes, right?
Tent all night.
but will
not. Can't wait for you to have that notification pop up.
but will not get educated. Folks, this ban is a ban on Muslims. Listen.
Retarded.
Okay. This idea of making America safe, folks. Okay. He has placed a ban on 7 countries, right? Iran, Iraq, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, and Yemen. Okay. No person, let me repeat this. No person from any one of those countries has ever committed a terrorist act on American soil. Not one.
Interesting.
Not one person. Not one person.
Maybe they had a cousin, Mike.
Okay, not one person. I mean, I don't understand.
Had a family member, Mike.
What don't you understand? Afghanistan's not on the list. Egypt's not on the list. They have individuals that have committed terrorist acts on American soil. Let me tell you why they are not on the list. You listening? Okay. Donald Trump has business ties in those countries. That's interesting. You've been conned. You've been duped.
Bamboozled. Bamboozled. Astray. Hoodwinked.
There you go. All of those things, folks. You're being played like a violin.
Man, very beautiful.
Oh, and it sounds good to Trump's ears. Oh, you know what? And to sit back and say, we have no religious test in this country. Congress passed a law. You cannot discriminate upon entry in this country with race, religion, gender. You can't do any of that. And this man didn't even take this to his own Justice Department now. The Justice Department lawyers didn't even see it. You know what? They're going to fight this out in the court. There's a stay, which I'm glad the ACLU, thank you, great job. I appreciate ACLU fighting on behalf of those who cannot fight for themselves. Thank you. There is a stay on this particular heinous executive order done by a very tiny, small man. Really
nothing,
small.
Nothing Napoleon.
His hands are small. He might be tall, but his hands are small. His mind is small. So tiny hand, tiny mind, man. Trumping down the road, folks. Oh, man.
That was a bumpy ride, Mike. That was bumpy down the track.
Man, it was only like a week.
It was a bumpy ride. My goodness.
Listen.
They ain't got a whiplash.
right. If that's a bumpy ride after a week, we in real trouble. Because I'm telling you,
hopefully,
man,
it's smoothed over up the way a little bit.
Nah, man. We protesting. And I'm happy to see all of the outrage that's happening across our country at the airports. And you hear now there's a petition in Britain to not have him visit Parliament. Oh, yeah. Theresa May, the prime minister, she's in trouble. Oh, she's in deep trouble. And I hope they pass that petition. I hope just like Iran suspended Americans from coming into their country. Folks, nobody is afraid. What we have lost is our moral standing in the world. We have become a joke. Matter of fact, we've become a country of hate. Folks, we got to take a break. We're going to get back in this thing, into this thing, or get into this thing. Is empathy overrated? Please stay with us. We will be right back.
A Night with Ralph Ellison. Come join us at the Oklahoma History Center, February 25th, 2017, at 6 p.m. for a night of music, literature, and dance. Get your tickets at RalphEllisonFoundation.org. Become a sponsor and support the great work of the Ralph Ellison Foundation.
What's up, guys? I am Leah Marie, owner of The Selfie Gods. Make sure you head over to our website, www.theselfiegods.com, and order your very own selfie moon. If you need that good lighting whenever you out in the club or you out hanging out with your friends and you need some more light for your selfies, that's definitely what you want to get, the selfie moon.
Folks, listen up. We are live. So if you have any questions, concerns during our live feed, go ahead and write those messages in to us. We're going to be reading them as we go throughout the show to be able to address whatever questions you may have or concerns or comments or whatever. Just say, stay engaged with us.
So this thing called is empathy overrated? Now, we're going to kind of have a discussion about empathy versus compassion. So we have this psychologist, Paul Bloom, who wrote a book about empathy being overrated. And we're going to be playing this this soundbite here. And what I want you to do is just to take a listen, and then we're going to talk about it.
I argue that empathy is a poor moral guide. It's biased, it's enumerate. It saps the spirit. It can be weaponized to make us worse people. But one question I often get is, what replaces it? And in my book, I make a distinction between empathy and compassion. Now, a lot of people think the terms mean the same thing, and it's not an argument about words. You could use whatever words you want. But psychologically, there are two different processes. One is what I've been calling empathy, which is, you're suffering. I put myself in your shoes. I feel your pain. And that has all sorts of effects, most of them bad, I would argue. But a second distinct process is compassion, where I care about you, I care about your welfare, but I don't necessarily feel your suffering. Now, you might say, well, that's just a verbal difference, or how do we know such a compassion exists? But there's some really cool research exploring this. And actually, I got into this because I was at a conference in London, and I bumped into Matthew Ricard. He was hard to miss. Long saffron robes, beatific smile, the happiest man on earth. And I got to talking to him, and he asked me what I was up to, and I told him that I was against empathy. And to me, that felt kind of awkward. But I thought, you know, telling a monk you're against empathy. But he said, oh, empathy, of course you should be against empathy. And he began to tell me about his research. And then I realized there's a body of research, neuroscience research, that distinguishes empathy from compassion, exactly the distinction I was looking for, where they put people in scanners, in fMRI scanners, and they get them to engage in empathy meditation, where you feel the suffering of another person, you imagine feeling it, and you compare that to compassion meditation, where you care for people, it's loving kindness, they call it, without any empathic connection. And this work, which was done in collaboration with neuroscientist Tanya Singer, where empathy is exhausting, it is unpleasant, it is difficult, and it makes you withdraw. Compassion is exhilarating, it's energizing, it is seen as a positive experience, and it makes you approach, it makes you more likely to help. And since then, there's been other researchers, some work by David DeSteno out of Northwestern, looking at the effects of mindfulness meditation. And I'm naturally skeptical about this work. A lot of claims about mindfulness meditation are often overblown, and I think we should be cautious about them. But DeSteno's work's been replicated a few times, and it seems robust. And the finding is, it makes us nicer. It makes us more compassionate, more kind for strangers. And there's not exactly consensus as to why this is so, but one speculation they have is, it makes us nicer because it dampens our empathic feelings. Less empathy, more compassion, more kindness.
Okay.
All right.
Dr. Bloom.
Dr. Paul Bloom.
So what, professor at Harvard University.
So what are your thoughts?
One of the main things to me is that we mentioned this guy is a Harvard University professor, right? And so even given that little bit of information, you can kind of paint a picture of how, you know, his life might have been up until then or up until now. But a lot of things about empathy and the way that we acquire it is experience. And a lot of people who are out there don't necessarily have to feel or be in situations where they have a choice where they can feel empathetic towards someone else or not. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of take that into account when listening to him describe, you know, even throughout the science and throughout the education, there are just certain things coming from different people who have not been exposed to certain things. Mm-hmm. You kind of take with a hint of something, you know. Something. You don't take it all to heart like that, you know. Yeah. But I mean, I think he makes some good points. Empathy can be weaponized. You know, you walk up to folks and they're like, "Man, just lost my job, man. The kid's homesick, man. Need a little bit of gas, man." You know? And they're playing on you, hoping that you feeling sorry for them will put you in a mental state to help them. And that's kind of where he's talking about, you know, it being weaponized and kind of can be a negative thing when used the wrong way. But as a humanistic virtue of empathy, I think it's a great thing to have. If used on a sort of switch, you know, not like you use it and you're living in that every moment of somebody else's experience, but you can turn it on and off when it's necessary to be there for somebody that you need to be there for.
Oh, man. Well said. Well said. Let's define these two terms. So,
all right.
Empathy, the ability to understand and share the feeling of another. The ability to understand. I think, you know, if we could point out two words. The
ability.
Understand. The ability is one. To understand, share. Share what? The feelings of others. So if you can't embrace that and get into that and absorb that, which is the feelings of others, then you can't be empathetic. Okay, it's impossible, right? And then begs the question, what's the opposite of being empathetic? I see. Okay, let's, that's pathological in some ways. It's what we want to say, it's a sociopathic almost in one way. So I do have some problems with his argument. And compassion. This sympathetic pity and concern for the suffering. So sympathy, sympathetic pity, concern for the suffering or misfortune of others. Okay. If you can't feel that, right? I'm going to interject something here in a little bit, what I think would make his argument a little bit stronger. But I think on the base of what he's saying, I have some problems with that. I mean, the first thing that comes up, can one have empathy without compassion?
I think they're intertwined. I mean, either way you look at it, you have to have some level of both when dealing with the other. So if I'm going to be compassionate, if I'm going to have to move myself to action and understanding where you're coming from, I'm going to still have to understand where you're coming from. You know, if I'm just going to be empathetic, I still have to understand where you're coming from. But, you know, empathy is something that takes courage. It's not like for weak people. He mentioned there being some element of burnout, so to speak, for constantly putting yourself in somebody else's shoes to the point where you don't even feel your own emotions. It's just like everything about you is going through whatever somebody else is going through, and that can be unhealthy. But in the same token, it's necessary, like I said before, to a certain degree. If used wisely, if used appropriately, if used on a switch of on and off, it could be a very good thing.
Yeah, I agree. The on and off button. But they
both go hand in hand, whether you're dealing with empathy or compassion. You can't. There are elements of each in both.
And we do have a comment on this particular one. And this listener says, compassion is an act/action, in my opinion. Empathy is absolutely necessary. Is a quality that garners compassion. I empathize and then try and take action. If a person cannot empathize, they will only have compassion for what they believe in. I guess there is a fine line between the two, but both go hand in hand. That's what you were just saying, DT. I have listened to this particular person before. Sociopaths are unable to empathize.
Like you said.
Yeah, yeah, just like I had said. She's probably reading our mind. Right. You know what I'm saying? She writing quick or something, you know. How can one not feel the other person's emotion? I mean, that's a great question. And, you know, that goes back to what I was saying. Are some people incapable, and I want you to answer this in a moment, DT, are some people incapable of having empathy? That is the problem. I do not think empathy is overrated. I've been able to connect with so many my whole life with the simple concept of empathy. It is natural to me. Again, in my opinion, you cannot have one without the other. And I think that's where his greatest flaw comes in at, is that this separation of the two. Mm-hmm. I think they're two sides of the same coin. Mm-hmm. But the question is, does everybody have empathy? Or are you born with empathy? Or can you be taught to be empathetic?
I think you're talking about born.
Please join the conversation, folks. Type in, go to our website, join. We really want to hear what you're talking about, because I think this has a lot to do with what we're seeing in our country today. A lack of, but go ahead. Can I teach somebody? Can I sit your little Johnny down and say, look here, Johnny, I'm going to teach you how to empathize?
There are different elements. Definitely it can be learned. But you talked about it being born into you. Mm-hmm. And that's a different kind of approach. But you're talking about, the temperament of your parents, maybe, kind of some of your genetics, your kind of early experiences, things that would put you in position to be empathetic to someone else. But no, I don't think any of us are, just born ready to care about everybody else.
You never know nobody named empathetic.
No,
Smith.
No, not okay. One.
No, not yet.
Not yet. Not
so
yet.
Somebody gonna name their child. I didn't heard it on one mic.
After you just said it, yeah,
one mic.
Right
now. Empathetic.
It's a little empathetic.
Growing to be up such a good person. But no, you're right though. It's being able to put yourself in somebody's shoes. Let's talk about for a minute how you do that. Mm. You have to spend some time with other people.
Absolutely.
Right? You can't live in this isolated existence where only your way, only your voice, only your thoughts matter, and it's like if you could at least get to that level where you're able to have conversations, be in close communication with people who are not like you, not going through similar situations, you can begin to learn some empathy through that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we also have another comment that came in.
Okay. Vicky Conklin says, in Eastern philosophy, compassion is an action state. It has boundaries and limits, in which is why we can empathize, embrace, understand our fellow human beings, yet remain productive. Without understanding and feeling for another human being, we do not have connections. We do not have a conscience. We become monsters.
Wow.
A conscience is the connection and ability to feel the other human's pain, and that obligation to make decisions, be guided in right decisions. Compassion is such a strong action state.
It's interesting.
And, like she's saying, kind of compassion, empathy being one of, I understand Mike stubbed his toe. Ah, man, it must have hurt. I've done that before. In a state of compassion, I might say, all right, this is what I did when that was happening to me. I put my foot in a bucket of ice water.
Epsom salt.
And the swelling started to go down. Yeah. That's more of a compassion than trying to move yourself to action and help rather than just feeling sorry for the person.
Yeah, and Vicky's talking like she's got some experience in that, because that's deep, when you get into Eastern philosophy and so forth. And it's so true, the conscious, right? Anonymous, participant as well as Vicky for chiming in, and we want to hear from you too. But this thing of the conscious or not having one,
some people just cold hearted, man.
And I think it goes back to this idea of your socialization, that when you're coming up and who your sires are, who's pouring into you, showing you, what are you seeing? What are you modeling? Is your parents compassionate or empathetic, or are they cold and callous? And I think that shapes us. But
well,
I
stop crying.
Exactly.
Cut all that crying.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, you're a man, right?
How, as a young boy, do you feel compassion for or empathy for another little boy who may be crying?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Man, he's a little punk, man.
Absolutely.
Over doing all that crying.
And you know, the thing about it is but all is not lost, because even if you come up in a situation like that, life has a way. For some of us, I don't know what that quality is, but life has a way of teaching us through experiences when we go through pain, this and other thing. I you know, this guy, a friend of mine, and when my mom passed away, I was down. I was, you know. And this dude told me, basically, he was like, man, you know, she in heaven, man. And, you know, you need to just, don't worry about it, man. And, you know, you need to focus and get yourself together and move forward. When my mother passed, you know, man, it's going to be a celebration. And I said to him, man, and it was real cold, man, when he said that to me, man. I was like, man, and some of my darkest hours, man, I was like, really, man. But I said to him, I said, well, I hope it's like that for you. Well, life has a funny way of showing itself. And not too long after that, his mom passed. Mm-hmm. And he called me and he apologized. He said, Mike, I'm sorry, man. He said, the things I said to you, I shouldn't have said that. I had no understanding. His experience, see, his experience caused him to be empathetic now that he felt the pain and the loss, and what he had to deal with helped him realize just how cruel he had been. So there's not, if you're not taught it in your childhood, but there's got to be something along the way that teaches you. There got to be a teacher.
I mean, somewhere hopefully along the way. You won't have to learn in such a devastating way, even those little basic elements of empathy and being there for somebody else who's going through something that you have no earthly idea what it's like to be going through.
Absolutely. 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 Folks, we're going to take a break. I want to go back just a little bit to the input that we've got from our listeners. I want to go back just a little bit to that. And then we're going to tie this in into what's happening today in our country. Folks, we will be right back.
Hi, this is Tiffany Hill, host of Authentic Conversations, a weekly motivational podcast where we discuss matters such as self-worth, relationships, parenting, professional development, physical, emotional, and spiritual health. You can find me on Facebook at Authentic Conversations by Tiffany Hill, on social media at @th_authentic, and you can also subscribe to Authentic Conversations on iTunes and Podbeans, and the show is also available on blackandstudios.com. I look forward to connecting with you, and remember, to live authentically is the ultimate form of happiness.
This is Josh K.
And I am Leah Marie.
And when we listen to podcasts, we always listen to
One Mic, One Voice.
You can change the world, it's your choice.
Your choice.
Welcome back, folks.
Building the collective conscience.
All right, so Mike, back to Vicky's comment, kind of talking about this conscious thing, right? Because in my mind, like, you know, like, used to watch cartoons, mm-hmm. and like it'd be like the Looney Tunes, and you'd be like, there'd be a little devil on one side and mm-hmm. an angel on one side, yeah. of the cartoon shoulder. And, you know, it's like, which one are you listening to? Mm-hmm. You know, both of them are saying something.
Yeah.
But what is your conscience? What mm-hmm. is the voice that's loudest? What is the one that is that is saying or navigating you to do whatever it is that mm-hmm. you decide to do? So Vicky talking about, you know, having a conscience, you know, and the conscience being the connection and the ability to feel other humans' pain and that obligation to make decisions, to be guided and right decisions.
Yeah.
So if my little devil man is saying, hey, man, don't worry about that, man. Hey, man, you got your own problems, man. Don't worry about what them other people doing, man. What the other people, man. And, you know, my good side is saying, you know, Deshaun, look, man, this is an opportunity for you to grow. Mm-hmm. This is an opportunity for you to step up and look inside yourself and remove yourself from the situation. It's not about you. It's about them.
Yeah.
And if I'm listening to that, that being my guiding ride, that being my thing that's leading me to decisions I make, I'll be better off, you know, listening to that angel on my shoulder than the one with no conscience and no moral compass and the one telling me everything else that I don't need to hear.
Yeah, and it's about really your moral kind of, you know, your moral worldview, really, how you see the world, how you see other people, I think plays into all of this. If you see value in people, then you tend to want to see the best for people, and you don't rejoice when people are in pain or hurt.
And a lot of that is also seeing the value in yourself.
Yeah.
You know, how can I be helpful to somebody else? And I'm so weighed down with everything on my mind, you know. I think that's another critical part to even being helpful to somebody else, you know, or even flexing your empathy to the point where it matters to other people, because it's like, even if you're wearing it, other people can see it.
Yeah.
You know, you're trying your best, but it's like, okay, dude, well, I see you still trying to get your head around all this too. Mm-hmm. So how are you helping me?
This, another, participant, anonymous, says, many people have compassion but never put in the extra work it takes to be empathetic. That requires truly caring about another's history and journey. And by the way, great show. Yeah, I like that. Appreciate the shout out for
shout
us.
Out, Anonymous. Hopefully not that hacker group.
Huh?
I said, hopefully it's not that hacker group, Anonymous.
No. I don't like to give folks names unless they give me permission to.
Gotcha.
And but no, you know, the work, right? I mean, empathy is work, right? I mean, you have to be willing to go the distance with someone.
Courage.
I mean, we talked about, again, going back, the ability to understand and share the feelings of another. Those are action words. I mean, that's in what I was going to say. I was going to say his argument would be stronger for me if he was talking about something more like passion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, passion versus compassion. Passion, any powerful or compelling emotion or feeling, as love or hate. Mm-hmm. So, in other words, you know, if I'm passionate, he used the phrase. He used the term energizing, like compassion is energizing. I think compassion has the same weight as empathizing in my book. Passion is energizing.
Mm-hmm.
And
you hear that word, it's like get a little adrenaline rush.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and you
passion. Oh,
you can be passionate about helping people. You can be passionate about making mentoring people. You can be passionate. So it has all the end result. The end game is being there for people, helping people, caring about people. But what you're driven by is your passion. You don't necessarily even have to dive into the deep pain of others, because you're passionate about what you're doing, you see. And that passion will drive you to help them, will drive you to empower them. But you're not necessarily empathizing, you know. You're not necessarily, I would say, you know, maybe that's a byproduct. Indirect, you're showing passion. Indirect, it could be read that way. But truly, passion can take you a very long way. Trust me. I know about passion. Sometimes when you feel defeated, your passion can take you up to the lectern and you can give a speech. So your passion can do that. But as I think he's correct in saying, and as you have pointed out, it can be overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
But realizing when to step in and to step out, when to be what someone needs you to be, and to be what you are, I think it's the mastery of understanding empathy. and the utilization of that in our society. So again, does empathy play a role in our country's division?
It kind of go back to the earlier conversation we were having about people being kind of stuck in their own box of perception, you know. Mm. So if I've never experienced other people, never been nowhere else, never, you know, didn't need to research, try to find out about any other place, you know, my worldview is going to be very narrow, you know. So, and you're talking about a whole country with millions of people who come from all types of situations with so many different perspectives on things and ways they grew up and customs and traditions and all these, you know. And so we're talking about a country that is already divided, you know, just in our thinking, in our daily practices. And then we're talking about people that are from other places. You know, if you don't travel, then you don't know what it's like to to be in Egypt for a day. You know, what life as a man or as a woman might be like for somebody else somewhere else. Because in America, you live in a dream, right? Waking up every day, got nightmare. Water available to you.
Nightmare. you said dream.
I mean, I mean, so it's like, you know, it's different, you know. So definitely I would say empathy plays a role, because if you don't get out and you don't see or experience anything aside from yourself and aside from your side of seeing things, then you're just right there in that place.
Listen, the debates that we're having in our country today, we would not be having them if we could empathize with each other. If I could understand and truly put myself in your space and time, I couldn't help but even, I might not agree with it, but I would say, man, there's a truth there. Mm. There is a reality there. Now, I have to decide what I'm going to do with that, but I cannot be in denial of it. I mean, we deny
not
each other's truth.
Totally not true.
Your own truth, your own experience, as if you have walked with me each and every day of my life, as if you are in my mind and in my heart. You know nothing about me. All you know is what is up on your screen. And my words to you, I'm trying to draw you into an experience that you obviously don't have, because if we had it, we would not be having this conversation. And this is what most of my white brothers and sisters have a difficulty understanding. That black people, the majority of them, okay, I don't know if I can speak about the brothers in you know, Ingleside, Chicago, but most black people live in a white world. We work for white people. Okay. We each and every day, we are mainly the only black person in the room. Okay. I understand white culture. Okay. I've been in it all my life. The school I went to was 90% white. The college I went to was a white college, both of them. Right. There's no misconception about white culture to me. The problem is that you think that white culture is world culture. And the very notion that you don't stop and listen and open up your ears keeps you stuck in that place of ignorance. That you can look at my truth, my pain, my struggle, and go, ah, that was way back in slavery. What you talking about? Mm. That ain't got nothing to do with today. We can be like this guy's gonna tell me women get paid the same as men get paid. So I sent him an article. I'm like, man, come on, man. Everybody knows. Oh, obviously everybody doesn't know it, or everybody's in denial of it, right? Women can do whatever they want to do. I'm saying you. Oh my, I mean,
it's 2017. Come on.
Why don't you empathize with the struggle of women in this country, right? Mm-hmm. What prevents you from doing that? Folks, listen, we're going to take our last last break. Man, it's
get
been
those
a great
comments
show.
In. Get
it's
those comments.
It went too fast, man. I'm sitting here thinking we just been like, it's been 15 really minutes.
Hey, listen, y'all going to have to get your attention span just a little bit longer because we're going to have to start going 3 hours.
They're going to have to. No. What they're going to have to do is become Patreon members, and then they can get the extended content. And we'll be talking about that here in a minute. But, folks, listen, we're going to take our last break, and we will be right back.
This is Quraysh Ali, Lansana, poet, author, educator, and Oklahomie. And when I listen to podcasts, I'm on that one mic, one voice joint.
This is DT of the One Mic, One Voice podcast. Just want to let you guys know you can go over to iTunes and search us at One Mic, One Voice and be sure to rate and review our episodes. Let us know about any feedback that you have and what you enjoy about the episodes. Also, you can go over to Stitcher where you can get the latest and freshest episodes of our podcast streamed directly to your smartphone or iPad. No downloading or syncing. How cool? Real smooth. Also, we'd just like to take the time to thank you for your time and for your energy and for spending time with us as we discuss the historical record of our time.
Welcome back, folks. Hang with us. We just got a few minutes left.
Yeah, hang in there.
I hope you're having a great day because we're having a great day in here.
Yes, sir.
The sun is out and we're just trying to be your smooth talking operator.
Did you hear me on that last commercial?
Yeah, you.
Wow.
Man, that was smooth. Wow. I got to be honest with you. Yeah. You almost made me want to do something.
For booking, call us at 555-555.
All right. Yeah. We just, Alisa sent in a comment. Mr. Owens.
Now,
we friends, man. I don't know why she called me
respect,
Mr. Owens.
Respect.
She's, man, she's a fine, fine lady. And she said, you forgot to mention that being in the military is a perfect example of living in a white world. It is.
You didn't even mention that, man.
Yeah, I didn't even mention that, man.
Wow.
I
mean, you to all
veteran.
Black, we're in all black military platoon.
No, man. That hasn't happened since Civil War, World War I and II. Hmm. It's right. I mean, it's being in those situations where you're marginalized, you understand because you are absorbed into the culture, you're absorbed into the traditions, and you're always conformed to those particular norms. And so getting people to step outside of whiteness and what they think is normal, like white is normal and everything is abnormal, right? No, wrong. Is the challenge. I mean, that's when we talk about the role that empathy plays in the immigration debate. This how can you sit up there and say that you're going to ban a certain group of people, right? Okay, based upon their religion. These are people that are DT that are fleeing. Get this, fleeing possible genocide. They're fleeing women being raped. And enslavement. How can you not have empathy?
Who wants to live in a war zone?
Exactly. Exactly.
Like, man, they're like bombing us over there. I mean, if you guys just had a little space for me to hang out for just a little bit.
There's another comment from one of our listeners. Trump has no obligation to human beings. He doesn't have the empathy, the compassion to feel what it is like, no obligation, no conscience. And I believe that. I truly believe that. Truly believe that. We got something else, DT?
Yeah, man. Amy Underwood Goodman says that this is a deep conversation with important implications in people's own behavior. People who do not reach out to help others in times of need would be more apt to say that empathy isn't healthy. During child development, we understand that there are windows when children's brains are most open to learning. And if those windows aren't taken advantage of, then it is much more difficult to obtain that learning later in life. Parenting is critical. We have a poor parenting epidemic in America. I believe we have to teach children why feelings are important. We have to model empathy and action to relieve another person's pain for our children to really, to truly understand and acquire empathy. We could easily blame, and people do, the family who lives in their car for own circumstances, bad choices, addiction, irresponsibility with finances, etc. Talking to adults who haven't learned this are going to be very hard to convince. The brain has already been wired against it. Man, that's
deep right there. And see that, and I mean, there goes the argument, right? Little Johnny was jacked up. Socialization didn't work for him. His sires were terrible. He's an adult. Now, can you teach him? Can he learn it? And you remember, DT, I said, I don't know what that magic thing is, right? You know, that some people will.
The intangible.
Some people quality. Will get it, but some people will just, they won't. I mean, they turn into sociopaths. They turn into Trumps. They turn into, you know, it's just me, my world, my way. There were people posting on Facebook about how America's going to be a great again, how we're going to subjugate people and how we're going to go to war and how we're going to, you know, and I'm just thinking, people die in war. And I'm just thinking, man, to me, that just seems like such a flawed person that doesn't understand that war never solved anything.
Well, let's talk about Trump's characteristics as a person. You know, like I watched the ball, watched the inauguration, seen him interact with other people, seen him interact with his wife, seen him interact with his friends. He's got the same sort of presence toward everybody. And I kind of see him as somebody, you know, a little disconnected and cold even at times, you know. We seen Obama and that family is like loving and, you know, like
welcoming.
You can tell they cared about each other at least.
Smiling, you know.
Like,
you know?
When he's looking at his wife, it's not even like they're on the same page. It's like, why are you here? You know, type thing.
She's going to live in New York.
You know? I'm going to put her in the basement of the White House. But no, you know, it's just like she's saying, you know, early on as kids, there are things that are happening in the brain that are trying to develop themselves, and parents have a great responsibility to make sure those things are being nurtured in the right ways. I kind of look at it as laying down cement. You know, as you build up the brain, you know, these things are at some point are going to harden and be permanent.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want to make sure you do everything that's necessary before the cement dries, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And at some level, you know, it may be so hard to bring somebody back from those early experiences and from those things that are already in concrete, you know, it's hard to change them.
Yeah.
But we are always fighting that uphill battle with those situations.
So do you think it's possible then to lead a social movement without having sympathy or without having empathy?
I mean, depends on the social movement. People are going to be empathetic about whatever it is they want to be empathetic about.
I'm talking about leading.
Leading.
Can you lead? Can you be the face of a social movement without
being able to see other people's perspective? No. Without being able to step into the shoes of somebody else just for a second to feel it? No.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's all necessary as a leader of any movement. If you have people following, you have to understand who your following is, right?
I think we have so many. The reason why I asked the question, because I think we have so many people that are in leadership positions that have no empathy whatsoever. But they're charismatic. They say the right things. They look the part. But there's really no substance down in there. Let me in our closing few minutes, let's break this down even a bit further, because I hear people always say that we are a Christian nation. Have you heard of that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We live in the Bible Belt.
Yeah, that's what they say. Yeah, the belt. Ain't no belt. Yeah, okay. Yeah, we live in the Bible Belt. Okay. So people say we are in a Christian nation, right?
Yes, sir. You know, preach it.
Preach it. You know, pass the offering plate. Okay. Well, you know, it's interesting because, so I'm gonna talk to, and we do know evangelicals put this man in office, right? We do know that, right? I mean, they were the ones that came out.
Record numbers.
Showed up. Okay, showed up. And what I want to do is read something that was posted by somebody that reminded me. I consider myself to be a theologian in a lot of ways. But this, it's in the book of Deuteronomy. Now, Trump said he's a Christian, right? As we say, he said 2 Corinthians, right? I mean, yeah, he said he's a Christian, right? He said he went to church, and right? I mean, that's what he said, right? I'm just trying to make the record, right? So Deuteronomy chapter 10, verses 17 through 19. I'm just going to read them. This is the Bible now. This is not Michael Owen speaking. This is the Holy Writ, as they call it, okay? Verse 17 says, "For the Lord your God is a God of gods and the Lord of lords, the great God, mighty and awesome, who shows no partiality or acceptance, no bribes. He defends the cause, get this, DT, of the fatherless and the widow, and loves, get this, DT, the foreigner residing among you, giving them food and clothing. And you are to love those who are foreigners, for you yourself were foreigners in Egypt." That's their Bible. That's their book. The good book. That's like my father used to say, the good book,
the
boy.
The good book, boy.
Not the bad book. The good book. Okay, so that's in your Bible. Okay. Christian nation. We are to love them, not demonize them, not say you can't come in this country, not say that you can't live among us. He said the foreigner. He did not say, you know, you had to be a certain religion, or you had to be a certain race, or you had to be a certain gender, you had to be a socioeconomic. No, he said the foreigner. Someone that was not living among you now that is trying to come among you. You are to love them because you yourself. This is what people don't understand, okay? Keep spewing all your poison. But one day the wind's going to blow in a different direction. And all that poison you spewing out, no, it's going to fall all back on you and eat you up. When you sit high and criticize on those who are low, let me tell you something. First come pride, then come the fall. Your hubris, America, is sick what we have done this past weekend, brother. We are witnessing our own Nazi Germany, where Jews were targeted. We have targeted our brothers and sisters. Listen, who's going to be next? Don't think you are exempt from this fool. This man has no boundaries. He has no conscience, as some of our listeners have talked about. I say this to warn you. What we got, DT?
Alyssa says, "I can't consider Trump as a Christian when he continues to treat God's creatures of color as less than him."
That's the argument, right? Is he, he's fake anyway. I mean, come on. There's nothing real about him, man, from the top of his fake head to the bottom of his feet. There's nothing real about him. So, I agree totally. I don't consider him a Christian, but the Christian folks voted for him. And we played it on the show several times back, how they said, you know, we know that we don't agree with everything that he does, but we got to get behind him. Well, no, you have signed off on everything. Everything.
Package deal.
Is empathy overrated? No way. No way. Dr. Bloom, I just have to say, I won't be buying your book, but I appreciate you writing it. I appreciate the discussion. Wow, DT, we have to show empathy. If not at this time, when?
You're right. I mean, at some level, as we continue to go along, as King stated, as so many other people stated, our fight is not individual. You know, it's everybody's feet to the floor, feet to the fire, you know. So at some level, whether we think we're exempt from the existence or not, we're all in this together.
All in this together, folks. And we're going to continue this discussion on Patreon. DT, how do they go ahead and become a Patreon member?
Go over to www.patreon.com. You can search for the One Mic, One Voice show. Click on our link. It'll take you to our page. You can see all the content we have available. You can see all the autographed T-shirts Mike has signed for the listeners. Everything's there, but you have to be a paid member. But we have lots of great things we don't do on the mic that are just for our Patreon members. So you definitely want to get in tune with that, because you know here we're just really scratching the surface, man. But if you really want to engage with us, become a Patreon member. Dig a little bit deeper, go a little bit deeper with us, and you won't regret it.
You won't regret it, folks, because as always, history will speak of us. Somewhere in the distant future, a scribe will reach down deep into the archives of our time, and what will she find? Will she discover that we overcame our differences? Will she find that out of many, we became one? Or will she find that we solved nothing and remain a divided peoples? Yes, history will speak of us.
We can make a difference if we try. We can beat the change that's in our lives. All we gotta do is work together. We gotta raise our children better. We gotta stop the hate, and spread the love.
One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice.
Today's broadcast is being brought to you by Blacken Studios. To learn more about Blacken Studios, please visit them at blackenstudios.com or visit them on their Facebook page, Blacken Studios. Today's broadcast is also being brought to you by Perry Publishing and Broadcasting. To learn more about Perry Publishing and Broadcasting, please visit their website at perrypublishingandbroadcasting.net. The opinions of the One Mic, One Voice show do not reflect the views of Blacken Studios or Perry Publishing and Broadcasting. Thank you for downloading the One Mic, One Voice show.